When she was 18, her father gave her the advice she needed to follow her dreams and become a writer. The next day, he had a heart attack and died in her arms. She did become a writer and a business owner and then a wife and mother. Today, after 13 books, a million of them in print, she's an award-winning syndicated columnist, a radio and TV host, and the owner of two successful companies. And now, Elise is here to help you rebuild your life. Stay tuned. This is gonna be good. This is the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB. Our number, lines are open, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Twitter, it's already working, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. You can also sign up for the free weekly newsletters at thinklink.com, T-H-I-N-K-G-L-I-N-K.com. All right, so while the phone calls line up and Crystal starts screening, I wanted to talk a little bit about a story that caught my eye, just a little story. I honestly, like you, I am completely consumed by what's going on with that Malaysian Airlines. I was listening to the news as we were just getting ready for the show, and I thought, all I want to do is sit and watch and try to understand what the heck happened. I was having this conversation a couple of days ago with my son Alex, and I said, you know, as the former screenwriter that I have been, right, it seems like this is just, somebody took this plane. Somebody needs a plane for something, and so they took this one. And he's like, Mom, that's the least likely of all the scenarios you could think about. And so sure enough, now they're talking about how somebody, you know, it's just so fascinating. Anyway, while I was reading every single thing I could find online about that this morning, I happened on a little story, and it said, and by the way, I'm happy to talk about this Malaysian plane for two hours, but I don't know if anybody else is interested in that. But anyway, I found this really interesting little story about how a Silicon Valley billionaire, it's where they live these days, has taken out the world's most valuable life insurance policy. Okay. So we talk about insurance all the time in this show, but I thought this was really interesting because an anonymous billionaire in Silicon Valley purchased the world's most valuable life insurance policy, and it's for $201 million. $201 million. It was sold by a Santa Barbara-based company that helps parcel out really complex things. And $201 million for a life insurance policy, even if you're paying $100 million for it, is a lot of money. And it was just so big that apparently they had to break it into a couple of different companies and do a bunch of reinsurance things. It took 7 months to construct it. And the last huge policy, I mean, it dwarfed it, right? David Geffen, who's the music, I guess he's a billionaire now, but he went into business with Steven Spielberg and Katzenberg, they created DreamWorks, right? So he's in the motion picture world and the music world and all the rest. His policy was worth $100 million. But this one, the Guinness Book of World Records, which is the, you know, source of all this information, said this is the new biggest one. So the billionaire has not released any information, but the reason that he took out the policy, and this is fascinating and has implications for all of us, he did it to help his heirs avoid paying a 45% inheritance tax when he dies. Because even though the, you know, 1% and higher have figured out all kinds of ways to avoid paying tax, when you die, you know, eventually you're going to get hit. Eventually there's going to be a tax and you're going to have to pay something. And so he's trying to deflect some of that by buying a life insurance policy that will pay out twice as much as maybe, and I don't know what he's paying for the premium, but I assume he's probably paying close to $100 million, depending on how old he is, for this policy that is going to pay out. So that was interesting. And then that tied to a really interesting story in today's New York Times Magazine about how the generation, the baby boomers, are just starting to pass down the wealth. And we've been hearing about this big wealth transfer for, you know, a long time. I've been writing about it for 20 years, and it hasn't really happened yet. It's a little bit like, oh, they're going to live another decade, or, oh, it may mean another 10 years. Well, there's finally a date when this wealth transfer is supposed to take effect. And it, when I read this, I had to read it. I took my glasses off and I looked a little closer because I'm getting to be that age. And I thought, that can't possibly be right. And they're saying that the shift, when this big generational shift will happen, is 2031. 2031. That is a long time away. I mean, that's another 16, 17 years from now. We're only in 2014. And it's so interesting. I mean, people are living. This has to do with actuarial science, how long people are living, how much of their wealth they're going to use up, the fact that the stock market is completely rebounded, and so a lot of that wealth is going to come down, and there's going to be this big transfer, and there's going to be really interesting thinking about how it's actually going to come down. And of course, there will be a tremendous, if there's still an inheritance tax at that time, and if there is, how much will there be? How much will go to the government? And so there are huge implications for this. And I just thought, well, it's interesting. You know, there, if you haven't thought about inheritance taxes and planning, I mean, for most people, this is truly a 1% issue, 1% of the country. It may even be 0.1%, because most people don't have assets worth over $5 million. You know, they've raised the amount of the exclusion. I remember when it was $1 million and I was writing about it, and that was pretty unbelievable, right? It went from $600,000 to $1 million like 20 years ago, and people were like, oh, that's a lot of money. Well, now it's over $5 million. It's like 5.25, and now it's indexed. And so two people can pass down $10 million in net worth. Well, who has $10 million in net worth? I mean, you know, the idea that I would buy a $200 million life insurance policy is absurd. I have life insurance, nowhere near that amount. And it's only, I bought a term policy, so it's fixed for a certain period of time, and then it's going to disappear. And as we've told our kids, like, if we die in this window, that's when that pays off. And otherwise, you know, it's what we've saved in the house and, you know, like everybody else. So the idea that you have to even think now about life insurance, you really have to think about what you have and what you don't have. And so most people buy life insurance because they need to replace working income for their families. You buy it because you don't have $200 million sitting there, or $10 million. Like, you don't have the problem of worrying about how to get out of paying inheritance taxes anymore. The idea that there are huge farms, you know, farmers who are going to go out of business because they have to, you know, and sell because when they die, their kids can't inherit, you know, all that. I think that's pretty much, we've taken that off the table. There are very few family farms that are now going to be worth that much more. There's a lot of big farms going on. So in business, too, you know, we've really protected the vast majority of it for people, for small business owners. It's just rare to have estates worth more than $10 million, which is what you would have for both of them. But it's really interesting when you start to think about how that money flows down and where you are in that whole sphere. And how it all comes together. So anyway, if there are any estate or inheritance questions, happy to answer them today as well. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. 16 minutes past the hour. Stephanie joins me on the line from Dunwoody. Hey, Stephanie, happy Sunday.
Same to you. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Thank you. What's going on?
I am, I guess, fortunate enough to be able to move. I need to downsize. And I have two properties. I'm interested in Earthcraft Homes. And I have two properties, and I have a hard time deciding which one may be the best option. I'm hoping you can help me with that.
All right. Well, try me.
Okay. I have one property that's purchased in 2006, 1855 square feet, so a little bit over $100 per square foot. The thing is, I have allergies, and this couple has had cats in. They'll have to remove carpet. So I'm trying to figure out if that's a better option, weighing what I have to do with the property. But it's existing construction, it's, you know, move-in ready, and it sounds that in the price they're asking, I think it's $235.
Okay.
On the flip side, and on a different side of town, there's new construction, Earthcraft as well, 1840 square feet, and they're asking about the same price, $238. How do you decide which option is best for you?
You know, it's a great question. I guess the first thing I'd have to ask you is, where do you want to live? Is there a preference between one side of town or another? It's rare where you could live in two completely opposite places.
Well, I'm retired, so I'll acclimate to the part of town. That's not an issue.
Yeah, but it is an issue because even when you're retired, do you have family and friends? Is your church or your house of worship in both places? Are your doctors nearby? Is it harder or easier to get to walk to locations? I know Atlanta, that walk to is sort of interesting word. But anyway, you know, when you think about it, it's really about your day-to-day living. It's about how you make that work in real time and the things that you do in real time. If you're going to travel in retirement, how close is it to the airport? Both of them can't be equidistant to the airport. If you like to golf, is one near your course of choice? So there are other kinds of things that factor into it. If, you know, the two homes are equal, then you can get to, well, new construction. Maybe it's not as easy, or maybe you hear more in new construction than in existing construction where they were built with maybe better soundproofing. But there's other kinds of things to think through. And we can talk about it a little more if you want to hang on. We have to take a bit of a commercial break, and then we'll be back. 404-872-0750. How do you decide when you have two properties that seem to be completely equal and yet are miles apart? How do you decide which one to choose? We'll talk about that more coming up next on News Talk WSB.
Scott Slade here, host of Atlanta's Morning News on News Talk WSB. Tune in Monday morning and every day for weather and traffic every 6 minutes, plus live team coverage of the top stories now starting at 4:30 a.m. on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB.
Love's your mom.
24 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glenk, rebuilding America one house at a time. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB. Talk, answering your questions. So we were talking to Stephanie, who's trying to choose between two completely disparate properties, and one of them it wasn't built in 2006, right? It was just, it's an older property? Stephanie?
Yeah, it was built in 2006.
Oh, it was built in
brand new construction.
Okay, so 2006 is 8 years old. It's not that old. I was in a house yesterday. It was built in, like, you know, 150 years ago, so that's old. This is, but you'd have to remove the carpet, which, you know, with pets is really interesting because I suspect if you're really allergic to cats, you'll have to do a little more than that. And the other one is on the other side of town, brand new, and how do you decide between the two? So, you know, my sense is no properties are exactly equal. They're not. There's always something that tips it into one direction or another. Did you think a little bit about some of the questions I asked you and some of these other ideas, like, where's your, you know, close to family, to friends, to your doctor, to your house of worship, to recreational opportunities? Do you think
yes,
about
I
that?
Have, I thought about that, and I created a little chart while we were on break.
Oh, look at how, look at you.
Yes.
What does your chart tell you?
My chart tells me that the one property is kind of the all-inclusive that has, you know, all the pools and the, you know, parks and just a lot more things to do.
Uh-huh.
A huge clubhouse. The other one, just 59 homes, is a small clubhouse and a pool. How important are those amenities to me?
Yeah, how important are they? Because they'd be pretty important to me.
Yeah, they are important. I'd love to have that. Just if you're retired, I think that could really add an element to quality of life.
So now what you've done is in 3 minutes of I'm so glad we actually came back and you waited, because the idea that you actually can find a way to differentiate between properties is really important, and people need to understand that there are things that are more meaningful about one or another. You know, my grandfather used to say to me when I was young, he would say, just make a list of the pros and cons, but sometimes it's all pros. And even just looking at the benefits on one type of property or another, one location or another, all the other things that go along, it's never really totally equal. You will be able to figure out how to tip the scale in one direction or another, and I'm so pleased that you were able to do it. So good luck with your offer. I hope it goes through, and let me know what happens, okay? 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Glink. When we come back, we're going to take your calls. We're going to talk a little bit more. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about that Malaysian airline, which I am completely fascinated by. And we will talk a little bit about what happened with mortgage interest rates. And, of course, the stock market, which is down, had a very down couple of weeks. We'll talk about that, too. Stay tuned for more on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and here to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
Six minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for joining me this morning. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB. The number, and we've got lines open, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Great question on Twitter. David just reached out and said he's having a baby next month, and he's been running some numbers. He's a CPA on tuition increases. He's seen 10.7% increase since 2004, I don't know if he means annually or not, at GT, Georgia Tech. Where do I see costs going in 18 years? And what I tweeted back to him is, I think the nature of higher education is going to change completely in 18 years because the pace of tuition increases is unsustainable. And what I mean by that is that there are all kinds of really interesting changes coming to higher education. You know, we've seen private education come in, you know, as opposed to like public universities. But we're also seeing Khan Academy, which has just taken off. I mean, it's unbelievable what Sal Khan has been able to create. We are seeing other kinds of change come to universities. We're seeing the need for the way people are thinking about education completely shift. I was fortunate enough to have breakfast a couple of weeks ago with two really dynamic women who are so involved in education. One of them has been working on education funding and where every dollar goes in a school budget. She was working with Giuliani when he was head of New York City, and she went to New York, and she kind of comes from an accounting, big accounting firm type background, and worked with him on where every single dollar of education goes. And it was fascinating to hear her stories. And then from there, she has launched into looking around the country and around the world and speaking about education funding and how do you put the dollars in the right places to make sense. I mean, if we're all going to pay a big tax bill, you want it to be the most effective way of educating our kids. And then the other woman I had breakfast with is in the area of education content. Her company, which has had as many as 88 people, it's a little bit smaller now, creates all kinds of education products that schools and teachers and other kinds of institutions buy and use with kids. And so she works from 0 to 5, which is kind of called early childhood development area, and then upwards from that. And we're going to meet again, and I don't know how I can help them. I hope I can help them in some way. But this idea that they both have this idea that how we educate kids, what we do with education is changing. I'm of the opinion we should start teaching our kids how to code at age 4. I've been talking to other people at universities who say that they're at a complete loss trying to prepare college students today for careers that don't even exist, that can't even be imagined in 20 or 30 years. So absolutely a fascinating time. So if you've just had a baby, like David has, who tweeted me, you know, this idea that you're going to save up for college tuition and it's going to be the same thing, I really don't think it will be. I can't even imagine yet where it is, but maybe I'll have a better idea after I, you know, have more of these conversations in this world, learn more about it, and I, of course, I will report back. 404-872-0750. Patricia joins me on the line. Hi, Patricia.
Hi, Elise. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What can I do?
I wanted to ask you a question about reverse mortgage. I'm 63 years old, and I was thinking about doing that, but I don't know, would that be a good thing or because I hadn't heard a lot about it.
So a reverse mortgage is a really bad name for a financial product that's very expensive and could be extremely useful, but it depends. So what happens is you take your equity that's in your house and they'll lend you about half of it. And you just get the money, or you can get it in a, you can convert it to an annuity, you get it in a monthly stream, and nothing gets paid back until the house is sold, which could happen when you go to a nursing home, let's say, or you move in with your kids, or you die, and the house is sold. So what most people don't understand, though, is that almost all of the equity will get used up. Right.
Okay.
So if you're thinking you're going to pass down something to your kids, it's going to be your house, it probably won't be left. But if you are in a situation where to stay in your house, you need more cash and you want to augment your monthly allotment from Social Security or your pension or whatever, and you want to enjoy your quality of life now, hey, that's your equity. And I think that there's that might be a good use of it. Or you could sell the house, take all of your equity as opposed to half of your equity and live in some place that's less expensive and more affordable, and then you've got extra cash. So tell me a little bit, that's kind of a large scenario, but Patricia, tell me a little bit about why you think you might want one.
Well, I just need extra cash. I'm still working, and I'm thinking I might retire at 65.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know for sure, but I just need a little extra money every month. You know, because I'm not really making that much money.
Well, what's going to happen when...
A little extra cash.
What happens when you do retire? Are you still going to need the extra cash, or do you have more money that'll come to you in retirement?
Well, I don't have a lot of money in my retirement, and that's what I want to do. I want to have money to, like, fix up things around here, because I really love living here. I love the house. It's a small house. It's not, you know, it's not a big home. So... I wanted to, like I said, have extra money to do things that I need to do around the house.
So I think that's fine. What I want you to do, though, is before you do a reverse mortgage, which is super expensive, is I want you to understand exactly how much money you think you're going to have in retirement. So if you are in a situation where... you think to yourself, well, let's say I'm getting $2,000 a month now, but in retirement I'm only going to get $1,500 a month.
Right.
And you need extra cash now. Well, if you tap this reverse mortgage, by the time you get to that point, you know, you're not going to have it. And you're going to retire with even less money. How are you going to keep things going in the house? So you have to look at exactly how much you're going to have in retirement, how much your costs are now, living costs, and you have to know that your taxes will go up in the house and the insurance and all that kind of stuff. I assume your mortgage is paid off?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. So you don't have to worry about that, and you don't have to pay this money back, but once you tap this, you're done.
Right.
So you have to really think it through ahead of time.
Okay, so that's what I was really thinking.
Yeah, I mean, you might be better off. It might be cheaper if, let's say, all the repairs you wanted to do were $10,000.
Right.
It might be you might be much better off by going and taking out a home equity line of credit, and even if you pay 8% on that money, right, over 5 years, you figure out a way to pay it off, and then you're done with that. And you've preserved all of the equity, so when the time comes for you to sell the house and move somewhere else, or, you know, you need to go into a nursing home or whatever else it is, you still preserved all the equity in your house. You haven't used it all up.
Right. And that's what I was thinking, and I just wanted to know.
Yeah.
Take on it. Something to think about.
Proceed with caution. You know, I know that you've got the Fonz, Henry Winkler, out there pushing reverse mortgages these days, and it really bugs me when famous actors go on the air and they push these things, because I'm not sure, you know, he certainly would never need one.
Right.
And they can be very useful, and I've done a lot of work, you know, with the reverse mortgage industry, and I know a bunch of those people who run it, but I just say proceed with caution. It's an expensive product. It's not for everybody, and there are some long-term consequences for it.
Okay.
All right?
Okay. Well, I sure thank you for your answer.
Oh, you're welcome, Patricia. Thank you for listening to the show. I really appreciate it. 404-872-0750. It is 45 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glenk Show. Ray joins me on the line. Hi, Ray.
Hey, Elyse. How you doing?
Great.
Thanks for taking the call, and I hope you can give me some insight. I did a home affordable refinance last year. And I got a great rate, and it caps out at 4% in 10 years or whatever. But they reduced my principal by $58,000 after the deal was done. I got a letter saying my principal was reduced. And I questioned it, and I questioned it with the bank. And they said that there would be no consequences to it. I filed my taxes. The IRS didn't allow it. They handed me $11,000 in taxes. You know anything about this? Yeah, it's not funny.
No, I'm laughing because no good deed goes unpunished, right? You didn't ask for this. They gave it to you, and now the IRS wants their share.
Put $58,000 back on. I'll be dead before it's paid off.
Oh, God. So, this was last year that they did this, right?
Yeah. They did it in 12, late 12, and I filed taxes
12.
Last year. I got audited for it. They pulled me for it. And now they're having me with $11,000 in taxes. And I've got 30 days to appeal it.
Okay. You need more help than I can give you. So
Have you ever heard of such a thing?
The forgiveness was supposed to be literally forgiven under the law with the IRS. So if you had a deficiency, but honestly, I have not heard that the IRS is charging people taxes when the bank forgave a portion of the loan. I mean, maybe after in 2014 for taxes payable in 2015, but I had not heard that they were doing this. And so...
No. And I went online and I pulled up all the information and sent it to the IRS. They just ignored it.
Okay, so like I said, you need more help. So what you should do is, do you do your own taxes?
Yeah.
Okay. You need to call a CPA who really understands this, or you can call one of the guys, the tax guys that we've had on the show.
Yeah, I missed them this morning. I didn't have my phone with me.
Okay, so Bill Nemeth. Or Chet Burgess or Mary Brody, they're enrolled agents, and they're licensed to represent taxpayers before the IRS. You can call them and ask whether you're entitled to get your money back, and maybe the way that you filed your taxes and the way that it got reported to the IRS, there was a miss somewhere.
Uh-huh.
So why don't you call either a CPA or call one of these guys. You can get their information on my website at thinkglink.com.
Right.
And see what they have to say about it, and see if there's a way to file. Because I know that the intent with the law was not for that to happen.
Well, you know the intent with this government law. Get all they can get.
Well, I don't even know if that... I don't actually think that's it either, but I think there's been... You know, here we are, just as a matter of perspective, right? Here we are, and we had a whole week go by without a billion-dollar mortgage settlement with one of the big banks, right? It's like you've seen these numbers go by, and I've watched it, and when you add it up, it's just hundreds of billions of dollars.
Staggering.
It's staggering amount of money that has been reclaimed by this government, by the way. They're the ones negotiating with them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a staggering amount of money, and it represents just a fraction of the wealth lost by people like you and everybody else in this massive Great Recession that I continue to argue is still going on. It's still going on. People are still, like you, feeling the effects of it and still hurting and all the rest. So I'm glad you've got this rate for 4%. I hope this other stuff gets straightened out, but please let me know what goes on. And to everybody else listening, if you are in this position, please email me at questions@thinklink.com or tweet me or something so I get a sense of how big this is, if this is a one issue just here for Ray or if this is everybody going on. And we'll try and get to the bottom of it, okay? 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Scott Slade here, hoping you're enjoying your weekend. Monday morning, tune in for live team coverage of the top stories, plus weather and traffic every 6 minutes during Atlanta's Morning News. Now starting weekday mornings at 4:30 on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB.
11:54 on News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750. David joins me on the line from Norcross. Hey, David, what's going on?
Hi, Elise. I was listening to your show last week, and it made a lot of sense to me. It was something about how
realtors are worried houses aren't selling or they're not being listed. I agree that we're still in the Great Recession. And then I heard a program on another radio station where...
Wait a second, you're listening to something other than WSB, really? No, I'm just kidding.
well, yeah, I was flipping around the dial.
Just kidding.
And the realtor made it seem like it's a boom time. He said, well, I just sold a house in 6 hours, and we, you know, something gets listed and we can't, you know, there are all these offers for it, like we're living in some sort of a boom time.
Mm-hmm.
And I remembered that, you know, last week real people were calling into your show with their real problems from real life.
Yeah.
And it, you know, I just...
It seems like a totally bifurcated situation, right? There's some people...
Yeah, it does. It seems totally antithetical.
Yeah.
And when I listened to this other program, I noticed that they gave a number to call the show and they don't get any phone calls. And also I noticed they were talking only about, like, the highest end homes that were... are going for between $700,000 and $1 million. And a real housing recovery is when a working class people, a middle class people, can afford a mortgage. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
I know.
I think there's this sort of deception out there on the part of people that it would benefit to lead us to believe that there's some sort of recovery. I don't think a housing recovery is really real. There's this whole thing where a lot of it is cash investors that are fixing up homes at a minimal rate to rent them out or something. I think that skews the statistics. And, you know, I think we really still are in a situation where I don't believe, one, in the housing recovery, and where the stock market is concerned, it's being propped up by $65 billion and more recently $85 billion. I mean, $65,000 million a month is propping up the stock market. It's not standing on its own legs or its own merit. And I can't help but think that if they were to remove this stimulus, everything would collapse, you know?
Well, David, I think you're onto something there. And let me just address the first part of your question or your comment, which I think is very astute, which is that there are some people who are experiencing a boom time. You know, they're a very small number, I think, of truly people doing that. But there are some realtors out there who are selling houses like crazy as fast as they can list them. And that's because there are all kinds of cash investors coming in, swooping it up, and all the rest. But I have been watching and writing about the real estate market for 25 years, and I have never in all that time, which has included several other recessions, but nothing as great as what we've seen, I've never seen us get out of a recession without the housing market leading us. And you look at the number of new homes being built, just the number of new homes being built, right? It's about half right now of what it should be. At the depths of the recession, we were building 300,000 new homes a year, which was a discount of 75% to 80%. And that is, if that isn't a depression, I don't know what it is. Building 50% as many homes as we should be is a depression. And that's kind of where we are now. We aren't out of whatever it is we've been. There are always going to be some people who can afford to spend $10 million on a house or $200 million on a life insurance policy. We just saw that too. So we'll have to see what happens going forward. But I live in the real world, and this show is grounded in the real world, and I'm glad you called to point that out today. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Klink. I'll be back in a few minutes, and we're going to take more of your calls, comments, and questions here on the Elise Klink Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours.
When she was 18, her father gave her the advice she needed to follow her dreams and become a writer. The next day, he had a heart attack and died in her arms. She did become a writer and a business owner and then a wife and mother. Today, after 13 books, a million of them in print, she's an award-winning syndicated columnist, a radio and TV host, and the owner of two successful companies. And now, Elise is here to help you rebuild your life. Stay tuned. This is gonna be good. This is the Elise Klink Show, rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours.
8 minutes past the hour on the Elise Klink Show, rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB. Having a very lively conversation on Twitter about a couple of calls ago, Ray, who's said his bank had just kind of reduced his loan principal without even asking after giving him a HARP loan, and now the IRS has just hit him with an $11,000 bill in taxes for that reduction, which if he could have afforded it, he wouldn't have needed the HARP loan. So anyway, he's working on that. We've already heard from some of our tax experts who have said they're happy to dig in for him, take a look and see what's going on. But anyway, lively conversation at Glink, at GLINK. And Ted from the movie Ted just followed me on Twitter, so you can go see. Like, that's a random thing. Anyway, we're happy to, you know, come one, come all to the Twitter feed. We're happy to have the conversation with everybody on there. We've been following the Malaysian airline thing, and the Daily Mail just did an update. It's one of the Daily Mail is one of the largest newspapers in England, and so they have a U.S. version and a U.K. version, but they just published an update suggesting that the plane, for those of you who are listening last hour, I'm completely fascinated with this whole thing, and I'm spending all my free time looking up, you know, all the stuff about this plane going off the rails. But apparently officials have revealed the plane could have transmitted a radar ping from the ground if it was still intact, which is absolutely interesting. Barbara joins me on the line from Stone Mountain. Barbara, what do you think is going on with this plane?
Well, early on, about 4 days ago, the Associated Press had an article on the Internet concerning the fellow that was... he was testifying in the New York, I think it's in London. No, it's in New York, the shoe bomber trial. And he confesses that he was fitted for a shoe bomb, but his parents talked him out of it. That article is on the Internet now, and you can go to shoe bomber and scroll down till it comes to flight 370 and get some really interesting information. The shoe apparently was passed when he, this fellow, declined to someone in Malaysia.
Will you email me the link of that, and I'll put it up on the Twitter feed for everybody? All you do is copy the link at the top of your browser, and then just copy it and paste it into an email form and send it to me at questions@thinkglink.com. Questions@thinkglink.com, and then I'll post it online on Twitter, and anybody who's as interested in this as I am can go and take a look, because you know, at the very next commercial break, that's exactly what I'll be doing. Barbara, thank you so much for your call. All right, back to real estate and money on the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750. Bradley joins me on the line from Douglasville. Hi, Bradley.
Hey, how's it going?
It's good, thank you. How are you?
Pretty good. I had a question about an LLC.
Okay, limited liability corporation.
I only have one rental property. Is that worth doing for one property, or is it?
Are you ever going to have more rental properties?
I mean, I would like to. I don't know when.
So the So why do people start an LLC, aside from sounding really cool at the water cooler, or what passes for water cooler these days? I think people start LLCs in order to put a veneer of liability protection between their own personal assets and what might happen with a renter who sues them. And if you're going to have just one rental property, it's probably easier to buy, in fact, I know for sure, it's far easier to buy liability insurance, an umbrella liability coverage policy, and proper insurance on that rental property that will protect you in the event something happens to that house or that property or, you know, the renter, the tenant who lives there, rather than going through the trouble of setting up an LLC for rental property when you just have one. Because once you do an LLC, you've got a tax return to do. That's an additional cost. You've got to maintain all kinds of separate bank accounts under the name of the LLC. If you try to refinance, it's much more difficult. You have to put the property into the name of the LLC. It just gets very, very complicated. And for one property, I think that's a whole lot of work if all you're trying to do is you know, add up your liability coverage. So I probably wouldn't do it for one. But if you told me you were going to have 10 and this was going to be a big business and you were going to build it and blah, 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 then I would say, yeah, you probably want to start an LLC. But even then, some big-time developers do a separate LLC for each building or each property they purchase. So there are lots of different ways to handle this.
All right. Yeah, I've got the home dweller's insurance. I didn't know. I've been recommended it would be worth doing.
Well,
I just wanted to get some better advice because I've only got one property right now. I mean, I'd like to have more, but I'm working on one to.
Well, like I said, it's really about assessing, you know, your financial situation as a whole. So I think what I would do is try and figure out what it is you're trying to accomplish, right? What is it you're trying to do with an LLC? What is it going to do for you? I would talk to a couple of different real estate lawyers. I would try to understand, you know, from an estate point of view, what you're trying to protect. And then I'd really go and talk to a very, very smart insurance person, because umbrella liability coverage, to buy even $5 million of coverage, it should be way more than you need for one property. $5 million of coverage may cost you a couple hundred bucks a year. Well, that's less than it'll cost you to do the tax return for your LLC. Right? So from just a dollars and cents perspective, you may be better off covering yourself in that other way, and it's a whole lot easier. So I think you need a little bit more investigation and then figure out for yourself what the right move is. 404-872-0750. Hey, Tom, welcome to the Elise Klink Show. Tom?
Yes, here. Hi, I'm sorry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question. I lived in a house since 02. We just recently had it appraised. We owe just a little over $100,000 on the house. It was appraised for $309.
Nice.
I'm sorry?
That's great. Usually people call me and they say, I had it appraised and it was worth $40,000.
Well, I'm sorry for them.
Yeah, me too.
And my question is, we wanted to do some upgrades. I wanted to expand my little ranch house, add on a couple of rooms. I just don't know which route to go. I mean, I've heard some. I don't want to create a problem. I don't want to get into a hole. I need some direction. Which is the easiest route to take?
So it's probably easier to sell and move than it is to build. In fact, my sister, her husband, and their two kids have been living in my house for the last 6 weeks while they've been renovating their bathrooms. And I will tell you from personal experience of living with them, and then 15 years ago when we added on to our little ranch house, well, it wasn't a ranch house, but it was a little teeny tiny farmhouse, and we added on a lot of space. There's nothing easy about renovation, but if you love where you live, all the other homes in the neighborhood are bigger than yours, you're pretty convinced that if you add on, you won't build a white elephant, right? Then that makes sense.
It does. I don't want to move. I absolutely love our little home. It's probably where I'm going to spend the rest of my days, including my wife. But from time to time, I have five sons, and they seem to come back home. You think it would be the opposite. I'd be moving in with them sometime, but no. So I want to have this, and we do have a lot of family so that come and visit us. So I want to have this extra one or two rooms,
okay.
But I don't know if I should take out a second mortgage. I don't know what to do.
Okay, so here's what you should do. Take out a home equity line of credit. They're relatively cheap right now. And pay it, and, you know, you want to make sure I'm going to put you on hold because there seems to be some feedback here. But you want to think about either refinancing and doing a cash-out refinance, which is hard to do and relatively expensive these days, but you have a ton of equity in that house, so good for you. It's either that or it's a home equity line of credit, which would go for 5 or 10 years. You'd pay it off, you'd try to get it fixed, and then you're done with that. I totally agree that you stay there. The easier thing will be the home equity line of credit, but you just have to do the dollars and cents on it. You have to sort of say, well, the payout for that over 10 years or 5 years is going to be X. That's fine. The payout for this other one over the years will be this, or that's fine. But you've got a whole lot of equity, and so this is an easy choice, right? This is just which one am I going to pay off faster and with more money, and it's going to cost me more money. And I would think that, and I don't know what your interest rate is on the $100,000, but if you've had that loan for a while, it's probably maybe a little bit higher than you would get, but you're now maybe in the equity part of it, and all you're doing is paying it off. So I think it's just literally, let me go down to the bank, take a look at my, you know, 3, 4, 5, or 6 options. You may have another option, which is if you're still working and you've got a 401k plan that allows you to borrow from it. I don't normally recommend this, but if you think that you're going to just be able to pay it off in 5 years and you want to pay yourself back instead of the bank and you can borrow enough money to add on these two rooms, that may make some sense. And you'd want to look into it. Just be aware that if you lose your job, you're going to have to pay all that back in 60 days, and then it would be really hard to get a home equity line of credit. So those are kind of your options. I think you also, just like Bradley, need a little bit more information before you figure out which way you go in one or another. And it's like I told Patricia at the start of the show, it's never an equal option. There's always one way that's going to be better than the other for you in particular. That's how it is, because all of us are different and our situations are different and what lets us sleep at night is different. And so when you make your little chart, it's going to help you figure out, it'll help you think it through and then help tell you which way you should be going. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Back in a moment with our prize pack on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on anytime at ClarkHoward.com and midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on 95.5 FM and AM 750 News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Starting with yours, I've got our WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack to give away. Great one this week. Includes a pair of tickets to the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra's Gray and Mahler concert, March 21st at Atlanta Symphony Hall. A four-pack of VIP tickets to the Spring Atlanta Home Show, March 21st to the 23rd at Cobb Galleria. And a four-pack of tickets to the 32nd Annual Atlanta International Auto Show, March 26th to the 30th at the Georgia World Congress Center. Great prize pack. We'll give it away to the fifth caller, 404-741-0750. Be nice to Crystal. She's the one answering your call today, and good luck. I want to read an answer that I just got from somebody who works at the IRS. And this is so great about this show. And when I used to fill in for Clark Howard, it was great about his show, too. They're such smart people who listen every week. And they contribute to the show in ways that you can't even imagine. You know, volunteering to take calls, you know, off the air and help out. And we've actually had a couple of people already call in to offer to help out some of these people who've called in today. And my thanks go to all of you for participating, because after, you know, 14 or 15 years on the air here, I feel like we've really gotten to a place where we can interact and help each other. But anyway, this email just came in from somebody who said that he is an IRS employee. And he said, your last caller, he's talking about Ray, who went through the forgiveness of $58,000 on the mortgage to get the lower 4% interest rate. He now has an $11,000 bill. Here's the comment. It sounds like the mortgage company sent him a 1099-C as a cancellation of debt. It was unclear on what tax year was involved, but his guess is that it was probably 2012, right? It was. And he failed to report this as income or account for it by filing Form 982 if he's insolvent. The IRS probably did a cross-check on his income and has issued him a proposed assessment. The amount of the mortgage that was forgiven can be income. As stated earlier, he may not have to include this as income if certain conditions are met. I know that you would not provide tax advice on a specific situation. That's for sure, because it's hard when you don't know all the details. And hopefully he'll consult a tax advisor in his case. Hope this helps. Thank you so much, IRS employee, whose name I will keep confidential. I really appreciate the information. And yes, it sounds like that's exactly what was happening. And because he files taxes himself, he didn't know what to file. And that Form 982 for insolvency can be tough. And in fact, the whole thing is just wildly confusing. So, Ray, if you're listening, there's help out there. Call somebody who can give you a hand. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. We'll be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find Elise Glink live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750 News Talk WSB.
Six minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB, 404-872-0750, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K, on Twitter, where Holly just tweeted me and said, This is in response to two past callers. An LLC also lets a real estate investor add to retirement, avoiding the unearned income trap. Good point. And a reverse mortgage, it could be as an Alzheimer's planning tool. That actually requires a whole lot more conversation, and maybe we'll do that again next week. But thank you for weighing in on both of those calls that we had. 37 minutes past the hour on the Elise Kling Show. Robin joins me on the line. Hi, Robin.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thank you. What's going on?
I'm calling because I own three rental properties. One of them is really underwater. I owe $72,000 on it, and it's valued at about
$35,000.
Wow. Yeah, I know. I would like to know if there's a way to lower the principal, or is there a way that I can get from under the loan altogether?
Well, it's really hard when you have a rental property versus a primary residence. So when you have a primary residence, that ended December 31st. There were other options available to you. But with a rental property, if you walk away from the property, then truly the difference between what you owe and what the property is worth, in this case about $37,000, will be deemed as income by the IRS, and you're going to owe taxes on that, unless you're insolvent, in which case you won't. But if you have any assets whatsoever, the IRS is going to expect you to pay at least the taxes on that. If you are trying to get debt forgiven, that's really a matter for your lender to decide, and there's nobody that can force them to do that. It would be great if they would. Again, you would pay taxes on that. The IRS would deem that to be income, as we've just been talking about today. And you can go talk to your lender. Have you talked to them about it?
Not yet. I'm looking up information and trying to do some research first.
Who is your lender?
Bank of America.
So they have been doing some forgiveness programs. Less, though. What are you paying in interest?
It's at 6%.
6%? Have you refinanced under HARP yet?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so you're not eligible to refinance again. I believe HARP is a sort of a one-time thing. Are you able to cover that, the cost of the loan, with the renter that you have?
I am.
Okay, so it's unlikely you're just going to get a freebie here. That's what you're asking for.
It is.
Listen, there's no harm in asking. Good for you. But I got to tell you, if you are covering the cost of it, you know, this is unfortunately the risk side of buying. So you probably, what, bought in 2006, 2007?
Yes.
Of course you did.
Yes.
I don't
now,
know.
I was wondering, what if I rolled it into an LLC?
That doesn't have anything to do with it.
Well, could I then walk away from it?
No, because the... well, no, is the short answer.
Okay.
There's a longer... You can walk away from it now.
I don't want to.
Why?
Because I have excellent credit. Right now the rent is covering it, so it's not a hardship by any means. I just don't like having it on my books.
Okay. So when you open up an LLC, the LLC protects you from liability, but you are the LLC, right? The
right.
Income flows directly to your taxes.
Right.
It's your Social Security number there.
Right.
So... it's not going to protect your credit.
Okay.
By rolling it in. So that's just, that isn't going to get you out of it either. But I, you know, it's good creative thinking, and mostly what you need to do is just hope that all the other foreclosures in the neighborhood get bought up by other investors, and then the prices start to rise, and pretty soon you'll be at least equal with what you paid for the property. And that could be maybe 4 or 5 years away, but as long as you're covering it, it's a pain in the neck and not nearly as exciting as having an investment that's doing really well all the time that you can brag about. It's not fun like that at all. But if you're covering it, and I'm in a similar situation with the property that would be underwater if I tried to sell it, but we're covering it with our costs, we're just going to hang on to it because eventually that will flip around and we'll be able to do something with it down the line. 404-872-0750. So we've been talking about what's going on with this missing Malaysian plane. Matthew, you've been hanging on for a while from Stone Mountain. What is your theory on what happened to the plane?
Well, we know it was a pilot error because within a day of the plane going missing, fellow pilots or friends with the main pilot were saying, This guy has got this flight simulator in his home that he built himself because he loves flying this plane so much. We know it wasn't just a mechanical failure because off it goes, and we know it changed routes a couple of times. It was clearly under somebody's control. And I had read an article that there were 10 or 20 employees of a particular engineering company. Don't remember the name of it, but it was Texas. It was a rival of Texas Instruments. And I thought, what if they wanted to grab, what if some particular rogue nation wanted to grab a whole bunch of those engineers because of knowledge that they had, projects that they worked on? That would be the only way to get them all at once.
That's so interesting. So you think it was a people grab?
I think that's it's the one explanation I haven't heard yet, and it might make sense. It wasn't, I mean, it had to have been a hijacking under the circumstances. Clearly something's gone on. But if it was purely a political hijacking, we would have heard something by now.
Yeah, I think it's
so it wasn't just politics. There was something on that plane somebody wanted.
Or the plane itself.
And it does seem like it was headed in the direction of the Middle East.
Or the plane itself. They may have wanted just to have the plane. It's interesting. You should take a look at this Daily Mail story, which I'll post to my Twitter feed at Elise, at Glink, at GLINK. And you know, forgive me, folks, because I'm just I completely fascinated by what's going on with this whole airplane thing. But they have now looked so deeply into the captain and the pilot of this plane and what he was doing in these 10 hours before it actually took off. It's so interesting to think about how somebody's life. There's so much of our lives that live online, and I tell my kids all the time, you know, just be careful because you have to live your life now as if it's always going to be videotaped or photographed and then uploaded to some internet site forever. And I just heard a horrific story last night about a 40th birthday party where this one gentleman was caught in a somewhat compromising position, and that has been posted all over too. You just never know. And so this pilot has had his whole 10 hours before taking off in this plane unraveling, including down to what shirt he was wearing and what trial he attended. It's absolutely fascinating. Matthew, thank you so much for weighing in on that. I had not heard that theory yet, but anything sounds plausible right now. 404-872-0750. Lee joins me on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Lee.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Pretty good. I've got a question. I live out of state, and a few years back, I bought a piece of real estate with nothing on it, just raw land for several thousand dollars. And we've been holding on to it, and the bottom just dropped out. And I'm ending up selling it for $500.
Ooh.
And I assume that I can take that off my taxes, but I have the IRS crawling all up and down me just to figure out what happened.
Well, you certainly will put yourself into a much more likely spot where they will do an audit, but investments lose money, and the IRS understands that. So it's not as though, you know, if you depreciated, you'd have to pay back the depreciation, but there was nothing to depreciate with raw land, so you probably haven't been doing that, right?
No.
Okay, so there's no depreciation to pay back. This is a loss. You'll be able to take it against a similar loss, and that would be a good thing down the line. If you don't have a loss that it is eligible to take it against, you get to bank the loss and use it.
No. I paid it. I paid it myself in cash.
No. You misunderstand me, Lee. I mean a tax loss.
Oh, a tax loss?
Yeah, you buy an investment and you sell it for less. That's a loss, a tax loss.
Okay.
Right? And so you get to, when you say, can I take it off on my taxes, that's what you mean. Use the loss to offset a gain.
Yes.
So typically, unless investing in real estate is your primary occupation, which it sounds like it's not, you know, you have to take that loss against a similar gain. So if it's a capital loss, it gets taken against a capital gain. So if you don't have a capital gain, which would offset it this year, you get to bank the loss and use it the next time you have a gain that you can that it is eligible to be taken against. Does that make sense? sort of.
I follow what you're saying. You're saying that I have to have another capital gain in order to claim this loss?
That's typically how it works. So if you sold stock, let's say, and you made money on the stock, you'd have to pay taxes on the gain, right? But if you have this loss in reserve, you would offset the gain, meaning that you would subtract, let's say if there was a $100 gain and you had a $100 capital loss just sort of sitting there, you know, you'd be able to offset that, and so you wouldn't pay taxes on the gain. So some of this will depend on what you have to take it. Now, when did you sell the property? Did you just sell it?
I just sold it, yes, ma'am.
So this will come to fruition for you a year from now when you're working on your 2014 taxes that are payable in 2015. So you've got the whole rest of the year to think about what kind of gain you might want to sell to this year in 2014 to offset with the loss that you have from this other property. And I would suggest you probably want to talk to some sort of tax advisor. I would wait until after April 15th because they're all pretty busy right now with getting everybody's taxes ready for this year. But if you have somebody who helps you with your taxes, then you could certainly ask this question. And I'm pretty sure I'm right about this, but you know, there are always extenuating circumstances that I may not know about in your life that may change the answer that I'm giving you. But in general, when you have a tax loss, you know, you wait and you offset a gain with it, and that's how you turn what is a negative thing, which is the loss, into something a little bit better. 48 minutes past the hour on the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours, on News Talk WSB.
It's Scott Slade, host of Atlanta's Morning News, now starting weekdays at 4:30. Meteorologist Kirk Mellish is Atlanta Radio's only five-day forecast to help you plan your week on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB.
54 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB. Great conversations on Twitter today, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Also had great people emailing me comments about the show at questions@thinkglink.com. Sign up for the free weekly newsletter because we do a recap of what's going on in the show, links to the actual shows. You can find all of that at thinklink.com, which we are rebuilding this year. It's finally, it's very exciting. All kinds of cool stuff, and I don't want you to miss one moment of it. So go to thinklink.com and sign up for the free weekly newsletter. 404-872-0750. Kathy joins me on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Kathy.
Hey, Elise. Love your show. I have a quick question for you.
Sure, thank you.
In 2012, I executed a strategic foreclosure on a condominium I had purchased in Athens, Georgia, for my daughters that were going to school there.
Mm-hmm.
So my accountant is taking care of all of the tax situations and so on, and of course it caused my credit score to tank. I'm not too concerned about that, but how does that affect my ability to buy another home?
Well, your credit score is key. So unless you're buying the new home with cash, it will directly affect it. Also, a foreclosure will put you in the penalty box, supposedly, for 3 years, 2 to 3 years, when it comes to buying a new house. And if you're getting a loan, you may find it very, very difficult to actually get a loan for 3 years. Like, they're supposedly a Fannie, Freddie, or FHA loan, just simply will be unavailable to you for the 2 to 3 years after you do a foreclosure. Now, in reality, that was originally 5 to 7 years. Then it came down to 3 years. That came down to 2 to 3 years. So I don't really know in reality how long it will take.
Mm-hmm.
But it will directly impact that ability.
But if I paid cash for a house,
oh, you can pay,
would have no impact whatsoever.
No impact,
right?
Yeah, no impact whatsoever. You could, you know, turn around and buy something tomorrow, which is really the beauty of having cash. Because as we've, as you, I'm sure you've heard, if you listen to the show week in, week out, and last week we talked about this specifically with, you know, why aren't buyers buying? And one of the big reasons is, well, these people with cash keep coming in, and I can't, and the sellers take the cash offer as opposed to my mortgage offer, you know, my offer that has financing attached to it. So cash is certainly king in this marketplace.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling the show, and thanks for listening every week. I really appreciate it. 57 minutes past the hour, so I'm continuing to follow the whole thing with the Malaysian plane. I will post online if I get any new information, but if you haven't checked out, and I'm going to do this right now as I'm saying this. This is one of the cool things I've learned how to do. If you go to my Twitter feed at Glink, I'll keep posting what's going on with the Malaysian plane. And you can take a look there. As I have said over and over again, I'm completely fascinated by this. And the Daily Mail, which is a British publication, seems to be doing a great job. So is The Guardian, by the way, another British publication, staying on top of it. And it may just be that those countries have deeper ties to England. And those journalists, who knows, are over there. But I find it to be just a fascinating case of, you know, we really don't know where this will end. And for the families of those who are on the plane, this has only got to be good news, right? Because in any case, if the plane was hijacked, there may be a chance that their loved ones are still alive. And that's my deepest hope for anybody who's connected to the people on that plane. I hope for your sakes that this plane was hijacked and those people are okay. All right, you can find me online at thinkglink.com. Follow me on Twitter at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. I'll be back next week with another edition of the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. Have a great week, everybody.